Hello, friends. It's Jim Nance, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to Beyond the Clubhouse, a podcast hosted by my friend Garrett Johnston. He is a testament to one of the great things about this sport, the friendships that come from playing or even just talking about the game. And you're going to meet some of the characters that Garrett has gotten to know from this past decade plus that he's been covering the sport. You're going to hear from players, caddies, members of the media. You're going to get the storytelling, the golf news, the players' swing tips, and a whole lot of laughs. It's coming your way with this edition of Beyond the Clubhouse. Here's Garrett.
All right, what's going on, guys? It's still Masters week, and I've got a podcast I recorded with Adam Shank, who's a Masters rookie. This is actually from January 31st. It was the week of Pebble Beach, and this was in his hotel room, our lodge at the lodge, right, at Pebble Beach. His wife was out running some errands. He said, okay, let's do a pod. Let's talk first Masters. Let's talk about my game and what we're looking forward to, just this year in general. Like, this is a pretty exciting kind of part in his career, particularly where we're at, what he just experienced, right? His team Purdue, he went to Purdue, as did his wife Courtney, who you see on Twitter, pretty active on social media. They at least made a run. Their Boilermakers made a run to the title game. Didn't get it done last night, but this is, of course, Tuesday of Masters week. And anyway, throwback here to this pod with Adam Shank. A lot of cool things about what he's looking forward to for the Masters. Of course, memorabilia. What is he going to get in the pro shop? He's probably saw a video on the Masters site that showed the drive down Magnolia Lane. But there's just a lot of things for him to look forward to. But this is also getting into general things. What has he learned about his game from the close calls he had? Think about Tampa last year. He was right there in the mix on 18, and he was up against a tree. He had to go left-handed. I mean, there were just a lot of things in that close call that he would have learned. A couple months later in Texas, I believe the Schwab, he had a big chance to win as well. Hasn't yet won on the PGA Tour, so we kind of get into what do you learn from those close calls? What do you learn from being in the mix and maybe not getting it done, but what helps you for next time? And what kinds of things do you pick up watching other players, the Patrick Cantleys of the world, or being paired with Jordan Spieth as he was at Valspar last year? So we'll see, try to glean some things. What things does he pick up? And he's a humble enough guy that he does, and he's not going to say, oh, well, I'm just focused on my own game and not looking at things like that. So we get down some of those rabbit holes here with Adam Shank. But here he is, Adam Shank on Beyond the Clubhouse. All right, I'm joined next by Adam Shank, PGA Tour player. This is a big year for you, coming off career year. Ninth in the FedEx Cup. It's been one of his, obviously, his best year so far, and a lot of exciting things going on, playing the signature events. And Adam, what's going on, man? How are you?
Not a whole lot sitting here, Pebble, watching it rain a little bit, but yes, great year last year. Very excited. Very fortunate year to play great and being all the signature events, all the majors. So, looking forward to hopefully backing up last year with another good year this year.
Yeah, and you're going to be playing a lot of venues that you've played well last year. I think about the close call you had at Valspar. I remember in March of last year, you're right there, finished second, had that big run there on 18, ran to a tree there, had to go left-handed. But still, what do you take away from that close call?
You take away a lot of confidence. You know that you're good enough to win, but it's good to put yourself in that situation like I did, as someone who has not won before and obviously you want to win, but to come so close, it just reassures you that you can win. You just have to obviously play well. You have to have a few things go your way. And ultimately, the more times you put yourself in that situation, the more prepared that you'll be. And I felt like I was fairly prepared, but got in contention again at Charles Schwab, lost in the playoff to Emiliano. But I feel like I was more prepared for that situation at Charles Schwab than I would say Valspar.
Just based on the schedule and how it all played out, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and just getting a little confidence from Valspar, knowing I can do it, knowing what I need to do well in my game. Generally, if I putt well, I can win a golf tournament. It just is so helpful when you can have like five or six game shots, putting. That gives anyone a great chance, but I generally ball strike it pretty well. But the best weeks when I play well, I putt well. So that's kind of my, that's the secret sauce for me, I think.
You've mentioned in the past, like,
you feel like in order to be ready for the big moment, you got to keep doing the same thing, right? You got to add up, stack a lot of good decisions together. What has kind of gone into that? Like what's a good example of kind of stacking a lot of good decisions together?
Yeah. So the way I look at it is so many tournaments that I've played in the past, I look back and it's something in the sense where, man, I gave away three or four shots. I really wish I could have, you know, made a little better decisions in the moment. And that's not always something you can plan ahead for, you know, lie where the wind's at, where the pin's at, the different, you know, positions you put yourself in the golf course. And the best way that I found to not have those two or three decisions shots where I want back is every situation that we come to, just trying to make the best decision for me and then making the right decision where if I do hit a great shot, it's a good shot. And if I miss the shot, I would love to still be on the green or have a great chance to get up and down. Like a couple times last week, I hit really good eight irons. We had three of them that went really far, and I made three bogeys. So that was maybe a little more unfortunate than anything else, but, you know, learning from those, hey, anytime you hit a perfect shot, what you think is a perfect shot, if it doesn't end up pretty damn good, it was probably the wrong shot. So, you know, a back pin, for example, if you've got, you know, 170, my eight iron goes right around there, you know, winds off the left, maybe helping a little bit. You have to allow for a little bit of variance. You can't try and fly it to the hole. Sometimes you get away with it. Sometimes you don't. If you hit it a little harder than normal and then you get three or four extra yards of help that you didn't foresee, you know, now you're 6-7 yards long making bogey, whereas if you plan to hit it 167, you know, you might save yourself a shot, maybe more, but sometimes you do that and it goes to a foot and you feel like a king. But long term, probably playing a little short of the pin, giving yourself 10, 15, 20 feet, and it's so simple in theory, right? But it's in the moment things when golf moves pretty fast. I mean, I know like pace of play is a big issue and this and that, but there's a lot of factors to try and vary in. And sometimes you forget something and you pull it and it goes long. It's like, hey, you know, maybe I should have hit a little different shot, or maybe I should have, you know, tried to start it right with a draw, knowing that I tend to pull that shot in a left to right wind. So it's just those little tendencies that I try and, you know, really hone in on and apply to the situations when they come.
Well, speaking of little tendencies, what's the most nervous that you've ever been on the PGA Tour in an event inside the ropes? What's the most nervous you felt with and had to deal with your tendencies?
Oh, that's a good one. I would say probably might be Valspar, just because I had been in the last group on a Sunday. Hadn't played with Jordan a ton. Very nice, obviously a very good golfer. He's an even nicer person. And he made it a little more comfortable for me just because he's so damn nice. He's not overly intimidating. He's just a really good person. I would say that comes to mind. I would say Eastlake, Sunday with Rory, final round. That was up there because I think I was in contention, maybe like third place going into the back nine. I don't know that I could win. I don't know how many I was behind because Hovland was running away with the golf tournament. He was running away with lots of golf tournaments then, but got a taste of, you know, hey, this is, you know, probably a lot of money. Finished third. Didn't know the exact numbers. Didn't have a great back nine. Made a couple doubles. Made a bogey, three putted. So I kind of got in the mix there in a really big tournament, which I performed very poorly last year in the majors, which bothers me a lot. So this year, definitely a little bit more emphasis, knowing that I'm in the major, so I can have a little more time to prepare, knowing my schedule coming up, whether that's changing an event or two before. But those two come to mind, and would love to contend, play better in the majors and the bigger events this year. And this week could be a great start.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the majors, I guess we'll get into that. Augusta National. I remember the first time we did a podcast a couple years ago, 2.5 years ago, I was wearing a Masters, you know, logo on my shirt. And you're like, oh, man, love that logo. Love that logo. Well, guess what? You are going to Augusta. You punch your ticket for the first time to play in the Masters. And I'm just curious, like you and your wife, Courtney, posted on social the picture of the invitation. What was the anticipation like waiting for the invitation?
Well, I knew it was coming. I did like a little. I'm not great on social media. I could be so much better. I'm not a big social media person. I did like the old, a lot of people that have played in the majors, Masters, a lot of times saying, oh, never gets old, gets invitation. So I did the old never gets old getting one of these, it being my first time. And it's funny that, the people that follow me, know me, know it's a joke. But it's just kind of funny to poke, a little bit of fun at myself, acting like I'd gotten a lot of them before when in reality it's my first time. It showed up. I was actually practicing in Evansville, and
oh wow,
the thing, the FedEx priority mail, extremely urgent, whatever it said on the package, showed up, and wife called me, and it was funny. I gave her a little test. I asked her to, hey, go ahead and open it. And she said, no, I'm not opening it. I'm waiting for you. Cause if she said, oh yeah, I'll go ahead and open it, I was going to be like, no, I was just kidding. I was just testing you. You're not opening that. So I always joke with her about that, but she passed the test, and we opened it later that night, and pretty cool. Holding the invitation that, that belongs to you.
Yeah. And the Masters, like, what kinds of things are you really looking forward to for that week?
Wow. So much. The par three contest. AJ is 9 months old now, showing some pretty early interest in walking, pulling up. So he should be walking within the next month and a half, I would say. So he will be walking by the Masters. Having my wife caddy, him walking around the par three greens, you always see other people do it with their children on TV. Everyone watches the Masters every year, everyone watches the par three contest. I feel like, unfortunately, it's rained out a lot of years, but yeah, to be able to do that myself, that will be something that I always remember. I'm looking very much forward to getting there and playing the golf course once or twice, probably once before the tournament. That way I can get, the starstruckness out of the way, get a few of knowing where everything's at, a little bit of the lay of the land, get an idea of how I'm going to play certain holes that may not fit my eye. I've heard that until you're on the property, you just can't understand how extreme the slopes are. So I'm excited to see how big some of these slopes are on these greens and see some of the places that you can miss. I'd like to hit it in a lot of the places that you can't hit it, because then I'm going to learn quickly that, hey, this is really bad, and playing it a month or two before, it'll probably be soft and slow, but you'll still be able to see, hey, this is not a good spot, especially when the greens will be running, 11, 12 and get firm, whatever they might be. But just getting there, and I don't know how many first-time winners have won the Masters. I know Smiley was in the final group, maybe Fuzzy Zeller. He's from Indiana.
Fuzzy's the last one to win, for sure.
Fuzzy's the last one to win. So, I always joke with Brett, like, I have never won a PGA Tour event. I don't think my caddy, Brett Swedberg, has been on the bag for a winner. I could be wrong, but, some people, Wyndham Clark won. It's not a major, it's the Wells. Huge event, elevated, yeah, whatever you want to call it, and then knocks off the US Open. So, if you're going to win a tournament, how cool would it be to, win a major, win a signature event to start off with? So that's, something that I'm prioritizing. Like I said, the majors and playing more competitively than this year, which making the cut would be a lot more competitively than I did last year. So, just gonna be weird always watching it on TV, and this year I'm playing that.
Yeah, and obviously you get that chance to play in it. Like, what does that mean to have earned your spot in the Masters, and to really that's part of your career now? Like, what does that mean to you?
I guess it means you either played really good for a whole year or you won, and if you win, that's a great year, or if you don't win, as I did not and have not, you still played great. You had fairly steady year. You had some really high finishes. I played well at Memphis, which is like four times the points. So if you play well at Memphis, that basically can guarantee you making it to East Lake, which obviously gets you a Masters invitation. So it means you've won or played really well. Both incredible feats. It's really hard to win out here. I know people talk about it. It's the broken record, how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour. It's because everybody's so damn good. And, you get somebody that might be a little better than you at golf. And because there's, a handful of people out here that are, you're not out here flipping quarters. They're just, over the course of a season, they just finish inside the top 10 in the FedEx Cup. Like Xander Schauffele, like a lot of names come to mind, Cantley, Spieth, Rahm before he went, but still one of the best players in the world. They're just going to be there at the end. and, you know, jump up there to contend with them in tournaments. In majors, I think that's what it's all about. And you can, you know, learn a lot about yourself and, you know, possibly win one of them. You know, why not me? They're great golfers, accomplished golfers, but at some point they got their first start and contended in a major, a Masters, whatever it might have been. And once you get over the hump once and, you know, confidence gets up and you know you can do it again, I think that's the start of something good.
Right. And you mentioned learning from a lot of players. We'll dug into that a little bit more in a minute, but I wanted to follow, kind of finish up on the Masters a little bit, in the sense that as a kid growing up in Indiana, what do you remember watching on TV? What are the couple highlights of Augusta?
Good question. So this is bad. I can't even remember all the holes at Augusta. Like, I know, like, you know, one, I feel like everyone always hits it left there because there's a right bunker that's not good. Two, like, I know it's a par five. I remember Louis Oosthuizen making it an albatross there. The next par three is always long. Quick funny story. We played Augusta State's tournament two or three times in college at Forest Hills.
Okay.
And that Monday, we got to go to a practice round 1 year. But I woke up really sick, went, lost my wallet, couldn't buy anything. I remember sleeping on Amen Corner, and they kept waking me up saying, you know, you can't sleep here at Augusta National. And I'm just like, I wanted to be there, of course, but like, I felt so terrible, sicker than a dog. I just wanted to go home. And that was my first Augusta National experience and my only one. So I said, I wasn't going to go back unless I was invited to play, because you're not going to turn down a chance to play Augusta National.
Or no way.
So that's what I always said, you know, kind of like a Ryder Cup. We watched Medina when the Europe team had the big comeback.
2012,
we were there for the second to last day. I don't know what day that is, a Saturday maybe. And it was so hard to watch golf because there's so many damn people. And how, of course, I'd probably go to another Ryder Cup, but like, I would love to go to a Ryder Cup and be playing. Like, that would be really cool. You know, speaking of Wyndham Clark again, like, you know, we've always been in a little bit of a similar situation. He's played a little better than I have. And then last year he won the Wells in the US Open. So, you know, he played in the Ryder Cup. So he's done it. Seeing your friends do it, it gives you, you know, a little bit more confidence knowing that, you know, they might be a little better than me, but, you know, they did it. So, you know, why can't it be me too?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's wild, a story of you being at Amen. I was going to ask you about Amen Corner. Like, how much are you looking forward to seeing Amen Corner? But I guess you've already seen it. So
I don't know if I don't know that I remember even what it looks like. Of course, I've seen it from TV, but I just remember the holes, some holes from TV. Like, if I go through the course in my head right now, I get lost. I always get lost on like 7, 8, 9. I know one's a par 5, 8 maybe, or 7. Jose Maria Olazabal hooked one left when we were there and hit somebody in the head, and there was blood gushing everywhere. And the dude was like perfectly fine. Obviously had a big old cut in the side of his head, but that was one memory I have from being at Augusta. But yeah, other than that, just, I tried to lay down and sleep, and they woke me up several times, moved to a new spot.
And they being security sandwiches. Or who woke
yeah,
you up?
Just, I don't know if it was security or who exactly it was, but they did not want me sleeping. I don't blame them, because I was probably the only person sleeping in Augusta, but I was, like I said, lost my wallet. I remember I used like an old medication bottle, crazy enough, to like confirm my ID at the airport when we were flying home. So that's all I needed with having a lost wallet, because I couldn't go to the DMV and get a new one, or have Indiana ship a I don't know what they'd ship, a temp, I guess, but that's all I needed.
Well, so were you at the Masters as you lost your wallet? You feel like you left it somewhere there on property?
Nope. Woke up that morning, went to get out of my backpack, and it was just gone. So I probably left it on the plane, traveling to Forest Hills, and like, maybe I couldn't, and this is guessing, but knowing me and how, I want to say irresponsible I was, but how I could misplace things back in the day, I'm sure I didn't have it. And then I looked for it once or twice quickly, and then thought, oh, you know, I'll just pass it off to later. I'll find it later. And then later was Monday morning to buy stuff in the pro shop, which I never found it, and then woke up sick. So it was just a whirlwind of a day. I don't even think I had any friends buy me anything. But my wife will make up for that this year, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, are there certain things you guys absolutely can't live without from Augusta?
Going to get a dog collar. or two for our
bunker,
6.5 year old golden retriever bunker. He's the man. Shit, maybe we'll get three. I don't even know. But yeah, I don't think there's anything that's off limits. She will put a hurt on our credit card, as will I. We'll get lots of stuff for family and friends. We'll have lots of family there. So I got to get one of those pullovers that you have on. You have another one on. I love that.
Yeah.
Their shirts are just so sharp. Like, it's, you know, logo golf courses. The cleaner the logo, the less you have to explain where it's at. And as soon as you see an Augusta logo, like, you know, there's no guessing. Like, you know exactly what it is. That's, you know, it's just cool.
Definitely. Well, hey, moving on to kind of a, what you're talking about with other players, Xander, there's so many solid players on tour that you go up against, but there's a lot you can learn from each of these players. And I'm curious, like, as we see guys like Patrick Cantlay, who just really is so good at plodding around a golf course, Cantlay or Brian Harman, what kinds of things do you pick up from these guys that you play with?
Yeah, you can learn so much, and you can learn something from everyone, even if it's bad. And sometimes, you know, you might learn something that they did that, you know, oh, I've hit that shot before and they just hit it. And it's just a reminder that, you know, you need to work on that situation. Where, see Brian Harman play golf, played with him Liberty National, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And he didn't feel like he played that much better than me, but he probably beat me by 3 or 4. And he just plodded his way around the golf course. He hits little draws, hits it very straight. I mean, what else is there to do? If you hit it pretty straight, he hit nice 3 woods and 5 woods into par fives. He hits his irons great. He chips and putts like Jesus most of the time. So, like, what else is there? He's not going to, you know, beat Dustin Johnson at driving it further, but he drives it just as straight. And he knows that when he's on and has a few breaks go his way, he can win big golf tournaments, as he did winning, you know, his first major. And he's a silent assassin. I mean, you know, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, they're, you know, John Rahm, they're assassins. They want to beat you. They're up by 3. They want to beat you by 5. So they don't have any problem putting the pedal to the metal, I would say.
And another player that you played with in the final group there at Valspar when you had that second place, you played with Jordan Spieth, a guy that's just so good at getting up and down from seemingly anywhere. Like, what do you take away when you play with him? Watch him.
Yeah, he hit it. He didn't hit it great in the final round. He hit it fine, but it's windy. It's playing hard. It's fast. It's firm. But exactly like you said, he got it up and down from everywhere. And, hi, babe. Courtney just got back to the house. But so many situations that he put himself in, like he hit some loose golf shots, like he does, everyone does, but he's so good at getting back in position or advancing it to somewhere around the green where he knows he can get up and down. And he's just phenomenal with the wedge. He made a lot of putts. He had a really poor tee shot on 16, hit it in the water. And then I think he, you know, dropped, hit it to a wedge, hit the wedge to 12 feet and, you know, poured it right in the hole. Like, there was no doubt in his mind that he's hitting that wedge close. Sneak probably a little upset that he didn't hit it closer than 12 feet, but like, he knows he's making that putt and he walked it right in. I mean, he hit a great shot on 17, great 4 iron. One of the best I've seen. When it was in off the left, hit a nice little low draw in there to like 6 feet. I chunk it right in the bunker, little toe chunk, which is my specialty. And hit it to like 15 feet. I make my putt. He misses his putt, luckily. But playing that situation 1,000 times, he's going to beat me by, you know, 2 shots almost on that whole average, 1.67, whatever it is. So just so happened that I made my putt for par and he misses 6 for birdie. But he had a good putt. It just didn't break. But a lot you can learn from him. Plods the way around the golf course as well. Not going to really overpower anything, but when he's on and making putts, he's tough to beat.
What do you feel is your biggest strength right now?
Driving it nice. Found a ping driver that I'm really enjoying now. Played the G400 forever, and I had one that I liked, but it failed the little test that they do, the face, you know, test the springiness, the face that they take your drive. They'd always test me at RSM. It's the third time I've been tested at RSM. The one that I really liked, they took like 5 years ago. They took one that I was pretty fond of this year. And they take the serial number. If you give them a G400, for example, to test, but you play another driver in the tournament. They'll keep testing you until, you know, it's not random at that point. Like, you'll get tested more often. So I gave him that driver. It failed. So I knew I had to put a new one in play, and I got the new ping driver, 10K, I believe they came out with late last year, and I've hit it great. And, basically been playing it ever since. Putting's been it's been a big issue, and I'm not, you can ask my caddy or friends or, you know, coaches that help me. Like, I'm never scared to, you know, be honest with myself and tell myself what the issue is and be a little hard on myself. Like, my putting sucked. Generally a very good putter. Last year, more streaky than anything, like, putted great at Charles Schwab, Valspar, had probably 6 or 7 shots gained putting that week, which if I have 2 shots gained putting that week, that's still a really good week. But that's the difference between, you know, finishing second. If I only had 2 shots gained on the greens, you know, I finished 20th. So some of that's luck. Some of that's just getting hot with the putter, but found a new, those were the ones that the guys keep winning with, the Jailbird, I guess.
Okay.
So I've been in one of those for a couple weeks. Feel like I'm putting a lot better now. It's a little hard to get your confidence up on the West Coast, like last week with the footprints and the Poana, even putting on the putting green at Pebble yesterday, like, oh my gosh, I head case so much. We were going to be there for, you know, 20 minutes, and I was there for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Cody Hale, great guy, works for Odyssey in the putter department. And he, helped me a little bit yesterday, bent, it's like a little counterbalance. It's a little longer, Jailbird mini with the new AI face, and putted a day for a couple more hours, and it's been great. So hopefully that honeymoon stage can last this week and maybe a couple more months or maybe a year. But it only takes one good streak. So hopefully that's coming up soon.
And that putter's been in the bag how long?
What did I use last week? Last week I used it. I think I used 2 putters last week, maybe 3. I kind of forget because that's very common for me to switch putters. I'm never going to use the same putter over and over again, just not to switch. If I can find confidence with something else, then sometimes that's all you need is just that little bit of confidence. But it was in the bag to start last week, and it will be in the bag to start this week. Cannot guarantee it will stay in the bag all 4 rounds. I think there's a really good chance that it will. But, you know, when I go back to my old faithful, it's an old Tri-Hot. Gosh, it's probably 20 years old. Sometimes when she gets on the sidelines for too long, then she comes back and she performs really well. That's what I did at East Lake. I didn't switch putters all year last year. Switched at East Lake for the first 3 rounds to the Jailbird. It was an older one. But then I went back to my gamer, the one that I used every single round, the final round. And I made, like, I don't even know, a 50-footer on the first hole, a 20-footer, and another 20-footer all in the front 9. So sometimes if you put her on the sidelines for a little bit, she really cooperates when she gets back in.
For sure, for sure. I know we just got a couple more minutes because you got to get going for dinner here. But I wanted to say, what do you think of the news today with PGA Tour and the Strategic Sports Group and their investment and kind of how things are looking? Obviously, there's a lot of shares that players will have, equity shares. You know, so what do you make of all that?
Yeah, so I'm on the PAC now. I was not voted on. I think there's, I don't know how many PAC members there are, but like the ones that are voted on choose like 5 or 6 more maybe. So I was chosen to do that. So happy to be in the conversations and give, you know, my opinions and be in some of the meetings where things are decided. But I know equity is given to the players. I don't know how that's going to be distributed. For example, like I played great last year, but I've only played great 1 year. So I'm not going to be like, I think there's different tiers. So I would highly doubt I'm going to be in tier 1, which I don't feel like I necessarily would deserve to be. Now, if you finish in the top, you know, 30, top 10 FedEx Cup lots of years in a row, then you know, you're adding a lot more value, you're a big name, you're drawing more attention. But I'm sure they're going to have some system set up to where it's based off of years, wins, you know, how many top 10s, top 25s, how many cuts made. They'll have to have some formula to make it make sense and be fair to, like, you know, a Webb Simpson, for example, who's played lots of great golf, players winner, major winner. I don't know how many times he's won, but lots where he's, you know, I guess you could say on the, you know, his better years are probably behind him. He's still fully capable of going out and winning 2 or 3 times this year. But he's played a lot of great golf and, you know, deserves to – Be on the forefront of, you know, the tier one, however they're divvying up the percentages and the equity. So people way smarter than me are coming up with all those decisions, and I think they will make fair decisions for everybody, I would assume. And like everyone says, if you play better, it takes care of everything. You know, playing better consistently for years, you know, takes care of a lot.
Your son, AJ, as you said, he's 9 months. He's going to be a year here coming up in the spring. How much has fatherhood affected your golf game?
Definitely some. I mean, honestly, it's kind of hard to argue that AJ necessarily hasn't been the reason that I've played well. We made our first road trip with him to the PGA. He was just over a month old. That was his first flight. So we went to the British, which I played terribly at. There was, unfortunately, my clubs didn't show up until Wednesday. Wouldn't have mattered. I played so bad. I honestly, I might as well have not had my clubs at all. But we went on our first road trip, like in the car, packing up for 2 or 3 weeks. We went to Detroit, John Deere. I think I maybe finished sixth and fourth. What's that? He was at Memorial, played great at Memorial, finished seventh. You don't dwell on the bad golf maybe as much. And as soon as the round's over, you know, you have something to really look forward to. Here, come here, Bubba. Come here.
There you go. He's got to make a podcast appearance.
This is the star of the show. So he's, you know, when you're not living and dying by golf, and I'll be the first to say, like, obviously family is really important to me, but, you know, so is golf. And family's great. AJ's great. My wife's great. Rest of my family's phenomenal. But, you know, golf's very important to me, and if I'm not playing great, then that kind of bothers me, and I always want to put my best foot forward. So family's first, of course, but, like, it's not one of those things where, you know, say, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, family's always there. And people say that sometimes, and golf is still important to everyone on the PGA Tour. But realizing that, you know, after the round, whether you win or finish 10th or 30th or last, it's kind of irrelevant. It's, you know, onto this little guy, and you can, you know, there's always tomorrow to clean up the golf stuff. You can get up at 6 a.m., write out some notes. I keep a lot of notes in my yardage book about, like, little feels that I'm having, or, hey, I keep, in a left to right wind, I keep hooking the golf ball to left pins or to right pins, or my flighted shots are terrible. You know, I've come up with a couple ideas of how I'm going to improve that for tomorrow or for next week, and then going back through those notes. And just trying to, you know, figure out a game plan for tomorrow or the next tournament, whenever that might be.
Say hi.
Hey, buddy. I wonder how much has travel affected with the little guy now?
Travel's a lot harder. My wife makes it as easy on us as we can. Right? But, you know, generally no more red eyes. If I miss a cut on Friday, there's no more 8 p.m. flights to get in at midnight or 1 a.m.
in Indianapolis,
because then we have to – like, we fly out of Evansville a lot of times, which is just under an hour for us, but still 50 minutes home. Small airport. There's a lot less flights that go in. Flying to Indianapolis, still a little bit of a smaller airport, bigger than Evansville, more flights, but now we're, you know, landing at midnight or 1 a.m. sometimes. 2-hour drive home. So with him screaming, it is nice to get home, but it's not always fair to him. So we will fly out that next morning, or better yet, just don't miss the freaking cut. You know, play 4 days, then you can travel home on a Sunday afternoon. Or if you're playing late, then you can travel home Monday morning.
No, that's fair, man. That totally makes sense. Adam, I know you got dinner plans. I'll let you get to that here with the kiddo and Courtney. But, hey, really appreciate the time. Thanks for jumping on the pod again.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully we'll talk in soon. Maybe after I do something good on the golf course.
All right, my thanks to Adam Shank for jumping on the pod again. This is January 31st. It's the week of Pebble Beach, so a couple months back from the start of his first Masters. But I like what he got into there about Augusta having lost his wallet. He thought the day that he did visit a few years back. Just fun stories. I love the memorabilia that they're going to go and get a collar for Bunker, their golden retriever, him and Courtney. That's one of the biggest priorities of that Masters Pro Shop. So anyway, hope you guys enjoy this as well. That was fun getting to know Adam Shank a little bit. And that was actually his third appearance on the podcast. So I know he was here fall of 2021, and then we had him on early 2022, the week he made a run at Torrey and got in the final group on
Saturday. So anyway, hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll catch up soon here on Beyond the Clubhouse.